historical marks on this land. And a little less than 100 years later, my grandparents, Dwight and Mamie Eisenhower, chose this place as their home. In 1950, they bought a Civil War-era farmhouse and 189 acres of land in the distant shadow of South Mountain. For a little more than 10 short years, the newly rebuilt house, along with the land Ike restored, served as the first and last private home my grandparents shared. It was the centerpiece of family life. As president and later in his retirement, Ike brought many old friends and colleagues to this farm, including British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and French President Charles de Gaulle. Sometimes he also used the farm as a place for political discussions and as a retreat for taking the measure of key people, including Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev, Indian Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru, Chancellor Konrad Adenauer of Germany, and Mexican President Adolfo López Mateos, to name just a few. It was here, too, that the United States and the Soviet Union stood back from an ultimatum that might have led to war. I grew up in the years of Dwight Eisenhower's presidency. As one of his four grandchildren, I was subject to an odd combination of family intimacy and life in the public spotlight. My siblings and I had Secret Service protection for those 8 years, so it was clear to us, and everyone we encountered, that we were not living a conventional childhood. An incident during my middle school years was a stark reminder of this fact. My history teacher once requested that I ask my grandfather a few questions about his time in office. I felt uncomfortable about carrying these questions to Granddad, but out of respect for my teacher, I did so. One question related to the 1956 Hungarian uprising. Ike did not like mixing business and home time, or having any of his grandchildren placed in the awkward role of go-between. That is why, perhaps, he replied somewhat tartly when I asked him why he hadn't intervened. What, and risk starting World War III? In a flash, I understood the gravity of the decisions my grandfather had had to make. Yet it was not until my grandparents had died that I really began to think of them as public figures, and when I did, I could see clearly that knowing that side of them was critical for my own appreciation of them as people, as well as for my understanding of the history of World War II and the post-war period. In 1996, I wrote a family biography that was centered on my grandmother Mamie and her marriage to Ike. Writing Mrs. Ike, Memories and Reflections on the Life of Mamie Eisenhower was an adventure for me. I learned about my grandparents' lives before I knew them, through their stories as they recounted them and the observations of others who knew them. And just as important, I gained a sense of who they were as they emerged as public figures. But in my professional career as a Washington policy strategist, it is my grandfather who has come to mind most often. It has been nearly impossible for me to undertake any topic that has not been touched by his legacy in some way. For that reason, I started to read about his career and the times in which he lived, perhaps somewhat defensively at first. In high school and college, my siblings and I were accustomed to years of professorial swipes and sometimes downright rude lectures on Eisenhower's alleged shortcomings. What occurred over time was not just the rise of Eisenhower's reputation, but for me, the remarkable process of getting to know the other side of this someone I loved. It has made me regret that when he was alive, I did not know fully the multidimensional person he now is for me. Discovering the other side of Ike has left me, frankly, in awe of how he handled some of the most consequential decisions ever undertaken by a general or a president, all while retaining a genuine capacity for empathy and kindness, which belied or survived the hard and painful decisions he'd been compelled to make. I don't know how he did it, but I saw firsthand that he never became